Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Check out our online video picks. Every week we choose five videos from the web, which I anchor in a picks video. This week they include Michael Moore looking for your horror stories about the healthcare system in conjunction with his new movie Sicko, and Fred Thompson in his own video talking back to Michael Moore. That's our online video picks at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, Zainab Salbi, my next guest, wears many hats. She is a feminist, an entrepreneur, and also a survivor of Saddam Hussein's oppressive regime, and she was surprisingly close to that regime. As the founder and president of Women to Women International, she has helped women across the world rebuild their lives after armed conflict, and it is through her work with other women that she's been able to talk about her own life in Iraq and also the circumstances that led her to leave Iraq. She is also commonly referred to as Saddam Hussein's niece, although that is not altogether correct. Salbi is the author of the book Between Two Worlds, Escape from Tyranny, Growing Up in the Shadow of Saddam, published by Gotham Books, and she will be speaking at a WNYC event tomorrow night at the Center for Ethical Culture in Manhattan at 6:30 p.m. For more details, you can go to our website, WNYC.org, and visit the events page. But in advance of that WNYC Meet the Author event, we welcome Zainab Salbi back to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming on. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So as I understand it, you grew up calling Saddam Hussein uncle, but you're not technically related to him. What was the nature of the relationship?
Well, at the age of 11, he asked, when I was 11, he asked my father, who was a commercial pilot, to be his own private pilot. And that was a moment that changed my family's life, because the relationship did not come only with the professional duties, but also it had a family-oriented duties. We were given a farmhouse. We were requested to go to Saddam's farm compound every single weekend and be there whenever he wanted us to be with him in hunting or hanging out or fishing or whatever it is. And so it was a day in which I feel like Saddam was like a leaked gas. We breathed him in our lives, and we tried to resist slowly, and sometimes we died slowly. And the fact that I called him uncle is a common cultural practice in Iraq of calling an older man who is a friend with your father uncle. And so in my case, he was someone that I knew, but all Iraqi kids, all over, whether you knew Saddam or not, or did not know him, we were requested and taught to call him uncle in our schools.
Really?
Yeah.
So as your father was Saddam's pilot, your family was very much a part of Baghdad's elite. But did this afford your family with privileges mostly, or was being so close to Saddam another form of oppression in its way?
Both. There were definitely privileges to the relationship. I would never be able to deny that. We were able to travel when no one else were able to travel. We had the best cars. We had the best things in our homes. Definitely that came with the privileges. But it also, I always say, being close to the devil did not mean that we were protected from danger. We were that much closer to danger. Often my parents would be with Saddam in a dining room, for example, eating, and they would be talking about normal life, talking and laughing, and he would talk about how he killed his best friend the night before, or how he killed his mistress or his cousin or his relative. And so everyone around him was much more vulnerable. There were no rules to the rules. You never knew what would upset Saddam at any given moment. And so, yes, it came with privilege, but definitely it came with its own danger as well.
Now, I've read that your sense of feminism came mostly from your mother, but that she was very much oppressed in Saddam's Iraq, and that there was even some kind of arrangement for your own oppression in some way here in the United States. Is that the case?
Yes. Well, most women in Saddam's Iraq were vulnerable to government violence. I call it a vertical violence in which the government was starting with Saddam, felt that the women came with the territories. If you could be in a restaurant with your husband or your friend or whoever, and if a government member liked you, especially if it's Saddam's family, you are immediately vulnerable to rape. Same thing in college. I remember being in college in Iraq, and when Saddam's son, elder son, walked in, we all would run away, fearing that he would like one of us, and we would immediately be vulnerable to his violence. So all women in Iraq were actually, we had a lot of personal freedoms in terms of mobilities and wearing whatever we wanted to wear, but we also were vulnerable to a vertical violence, what I call. Now, my mother was, again, as all women were, much closer to that danger, but she also resisted in many ways. I grew up with her telling me that I should never learn how to, that no man should expect me to know how to cook or clean, for example, just because I was a woman, that I should always choose my partner, I should marry for love, and I should never let anybody talk with me the wrong way or speak with me the wrong way or touch me the wrong way. Now, the irony in my life, the shock in my life, when at the age of 20, my mother asked me to accept an arranged marriage proposal. An arranged marriage in my particular family or culture did not mean forced at all. It meant the family, you know, provide the opportunities, and I have the choice whether to say yes or no. In this case, my mother begged me to say yes, and cried and cried and cried, and said, "Please, please, please, ignore what I've said in the past, and just you have to leave Iraq." And in many ways, I just wanted to be a good daughter, and I agreed to marry someone that I did not know, I did not like when I met him, and who did every single thing my mother told me not to tolerate to me.
Oh, my goodness. But that was your ticket out of Iraq, was marrying somebody who could get you out.
I learned that 10 years later when my mother was on her deathbed.
Wow.
She told me. I left him. I ended up leaving him after 3 months. And Iraq was already invading Kuwait at the time, and I could not go back to the country. And I only learned 10 years later that my mother was doing that to get me out of the country because she was really worried that Saddam was starting a liking to me. And that was a turning point in my life to understand my own story. The irony is that my mother wrote me my story because she had Lou Gehrig's disease and she could not speak, and she wrote me what happened to her life and my life. And the irony is I run a program through Women for Women International, where I encourage women to write each other, American women to write to Afghan women and Iraqi women and Congolese women, Rwandese women, to reach out to them and to share their stories with them, with each other. And then I get my own story through writing and through my own mom.
Ironies upon ironies, and certainly not an ordinary life that you have led to date. My guest on WNYC is Zainab Salbi, who is the founder and president of Women to Women International, helping women across the world rebuild their lives after armed conflict. She's the author of Between Two Worlds, Escape from Tyranny, Growing Up in the Shadow of Saddam. As you heard, her father was Saddam Hussein's private pilot for a number of years, and she will be speaking at a WNYC Meet the Author event at the Center for Ethical Culture, 6:30 tomorrow night. That's the Manhattan Center for Ethical Culture, and you can get more information at WNYC.org. Click on the events page. Tell me more about Women to Women International. When you ask women to make direct contact with Iraqi women, with Afghan women, what can women in our listening audience do?
Well, we have an appeal to every single woman to reach out to a woman survivor of war by sending her $27 a month, along with a letter to start communication link between the two women. This program is only for 1 year. You basically sponsor a sister, what we call her. You get to know who she is, where she lives, what is her circumstances. You get to share with her about you. I call it our own version of public diplomacy, where America is not only this big country, but it's about Mary, who is helping me and who's helping my family and saving me, and I will pray for her. Once the women get into the sponsorship program, they go through an intensive training in women's rights, women's role in the society, economy, politics, and health. They get skills where they can get jobs, and at the end of the year, we help them get jobs and stand on their feet and move from victim to survivor to active citizen. But the whole idea of what we're arguing, that we need to reach out to the world in in a way that humanizes us as much as we need to humanize the women we are reaching out to. We need to understand each other's stories. We need to understand each other's circumstances. We need to understand the intimate stories that people go through, the need for sending the kids to school or the love we have. Or one of the observations, I was recently in Rwanda and Congo, and one of the observations that I always have when I ask the women, what is your impression when you get the letters from the American women? And they said, there is so much love in America. That they have so much access, love, that they are reaching out to us. And that's the way we reach out to the hearts and minds of people. It's one woman at a time, enabling her to get a job, enabling her to get a training. And any member can learn about the stories of the women and see how the program has impacted their lives by just going to our website at womenforwomen.org.
Womenforwomen.org, or you can also get to it through our webpage. We put a link there if you happen to be coming on to our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we have a link there to Women to Women International, or you can go right to their site, as Zainab Salbi just said. I'm curious, given your experience under Saddam Hussein, that era nonetheless had a reputation of a relatively secular Iraq, a relatively good place to grow up as a woman with the likelihood of being educated relative to other Arab countries, relative to other parts of the world. And now we see how things are going downhill in Iraq with all the chaos and the sectarian violence there, and apparently a lot more conservative Islam, which does not respect the rights of women, the choices of women. Can you say things are better or worse today than before the invasion?
Definitely worse. I would not be able to say they are better at all. But what we had before was also bad. So I feel that there are two different kinds of bads that we are comparing. Before, during Saddam Hussein's time, as you mentioned, we had personal freedom. I could be anything I wanted to be, an engineer or an artist. It didn't matter. I could drive whatever. Yes, there was definitely a level of secularism, but I was always, as a woman, and any woman in Iraq, we were always vulnerable to government-led violence against women and against men in general. And that vulnerability, I could never be able to say there was a good time in it. Saddam was like a poison gas leaked into our lives. Now, having said that, that switched to what I call horizontal violence, from a vertical violence sponsored by the government to a horizontal violence against women, where everyone is conducting it. Right now, the status of women in Iraq, using security alerts, I would say code red, it is absolutely horrible. Professional women are getting assassinated. I myself lost count of how many women I know who are doctors, reporters, pharmacists, parliamentarians, economists, you name it, who have been assassinated or survived assassination. Women hair salons are being targeted for bombs and explosions. Female college students are being targeted for kidnapping and rape. It is a political message that is no different, in my opinion, in many elements of it, than the Taliban messages of women go home. Now, it's also not only one unified message. I mean, I really believe that we have to distinguish between conservatism and fundamentalism. And there's both of them in Iraq. There is the fundamentalist message of women go home, and if we see you in the street, we will kill you. And there's a conservative message of you're a second-class citizen, but you can participate in a lot of the areas that you can participate in, which is you're just a second-class citizen. And that is what's happening in a lot of the south and even the north of the country. And so I believe in many, many ways that women are indicators. They are like bellwether for the direction of the society. Violence often starts with women. It's the first message that extremists send to the society.
So we have 30 seconds left. What would you like to see the U.S. do next in Iraq?
Invest in economic opportunities and jobs for the Iraqis. We are not talking about the economic realities of Iraq and the need to get jobs and how expensive it is to live right there. We can't have the solution to Iraq only be an army-oriented solution.
Is that better done, that investment? Is it better done with or without a U.S. military presence?
To be honest, I would say without U.S. military presence, we need to invest, we need to appeal to the Iraqi private sectors, we need to appeal to the different private sectors around the world to go back and invest in Iraqi's infrastructure and building the country back together.
And we have to leave it there. Zainab Salbi, founder and president of Women to Women International. She'll be speaking at a WNYC Meet the Authors event tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Center for Ethical Culture on the Upper West Side. Information at WNYC.org. Click on events. So nice to talk to you again.
Pleasure.
Keep up the very important work. Thank you.
Thank you.